This is Due By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, get a flu shot.
I wrote down on my little, my little document with all my bits that I come up with to talk about on the show. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a little bit and I said, Chicago, and it's written on my list here. It says Chicago God Ownership.
Hmm.
What did I mean? Did I mean to say gun? Chicago
I think
gun ownership?
Dog?
Dog ownership?
Is it an acronym?
I don't have any stories about Chicago dog ownership or gun ownership or God ownership. Maybe ownership is the Chicago God something? I even think I remember where I was when I was typing this hastily on my phone. And I wonder I was thinking about at that point.
What a terrible feeling. Maybe it's about eminent domain.
Every so often I have a dream where I come up with either like the usually it's comedy related. Like sometimes I'm like, I have a dream where I'm like either doing a podcast or I'm on stage doing comedy or something, and I say the funniest thing, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I just came up with that. And sometimes I'm even aware that it's in the dream, and it's like, and I even have that thought of like, this is a dream, but I just thought of the funniest thing of all time in the dream, and then I like wake myself up. I have my little, either have my phone or a little pad of paper by the bed. I write it down, and then I wake up the next morning, and it says, like, Chicago God ownership. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what? That was the joke? Like,
I have probably three breakthroughs a week at some point when I'm dreaming. And at least three times a week, something occurs to me in a dream that explains everything. It's some
good
kind of unified field theory that explains. And then when I wake up, I say something like, there were four sticks in a box and it was real. And I'm like, what? That doesn't really capture, I don't think, the... Maybe in order to be a unified field theory that explains all things, you know, maybe it has to be inscrutable.
But what am I supposed to say when you talk about your dreams? I've already forgot the catchphrase.
Oh, ancient bird, tell it to the ancient bird.
No. What's it's like a Italian word. Permiso.
Oh.
Permiso.
Yeah, and then you got the Scarlett Johansson branded helmet.
I'm buying a planetarium projector. It's like 10 feet tall. You guys want to see a picture of it?
Yes.
Hang on.
Is this for your home? You sound sick, Max. Do you have a little bit of a cold?
I'm very sick. I'm so sick.
You probably didn't get your flu shot. That's a problem. Don't start if you get a flu shot.
It's, here we go. Let me put it in our secret super channel here. Open up the messages. Due by Friday. Here's a picture of it. So my friend Harper saw this on Craigslist yesterday, $750.
What?
Oh my God!
Yeah, it's from an old.
It looks like a satellite.
Yeah, it's huge. So it's like from an old planetarium. So I'm trying to buy it. I'm in contact with the guy. I'm the leading buyer. I'm trying to find maybe the Adler Planetarium or the Chicago Design Museum might be interested in it. Maybe I'll just put it in the office and we'll have a 1940s star projector.
Is it
here.
Functional?
Yeah, it works.
Oh. Okay, this is very cool.
Is it updatable?
What do you think? We discovered, like, new stars? I think we knew them all.
Yeah, you're probably right. They probably knew them by the 30s. They probably had it all written down. This is a very large, just so our listeners won't be able to see, in this old black and white photograph, there's a man standing next to this thing that looks like, not a centrifuge, it looks like something you test astronauts in, spinning around, and it's like a big barbell that looks to be about 8 or 9 feet high. Big.
It's a Spitz Space Systems Model A4 planetarium projector for sale, $750.
That's it?
It was refurbished in 2011. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Get high and look at it.
I talked to some of my astronomer friends, and they're all skeptical. They're like, "What are you going to do with this?" And I was like, "I don't know. Have it.
It's pretty."
Well, if you appreciate it as a beautiful pseudoscientific device, I think that's plenty. To be able to use it, I think you're going to need a lot of conditions. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to shoot this on a 10-foot ceiling.
Merle, let me ask you a question. And sometimes in situations like this, you got to say, WWRD, what would Roderick do?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I think we all know the answer to that.
Yeah, he put it in his
What if I listened to 200 hours of Roderick on the line to not buy a Spitz A4 planetarium projector for $750?
I thought this was going to be a five-figure type situation. That's a doddle. You've got to pick that up.
I think he wants it to go to a good home where it's going to be appreciated. Like, ultimately, I'd be really happy if this ended up in the Chicago Design Museum and it was just sort of a really cool piece of industrial design that the public could look at.
You could put it on loan. You could get your name on a plaque or something? Wouldn't that be nice?
And it never works.
You're always looking for a legacy, Max. You want to be remembered.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
I get the sense
that you would like to be remembered, and I think this could be the beginning of something for you. Maybe you just start buying large things.
Well, you know, when the last living person forgets you, you become the Edward James Olmos skeleton, and you fade away.
Is that what happens? Mm-hmm. Cylons never really had a plan.
You guys never saw. Didn't see Coco yet?
No.
Guys. One time, let me tell you something. One time, Paul Saborin, I'm gonna say. Acquaintance of the show. Friend is a strong word. Yeah. One time, acquaintance of the show, Paul Saborin, said, I don't like anything popular or mainstream. And I just want to say...
It's a normal thing to say.
I just want to say, Coco is very popular and everyone loves it, and I thought it was fucking brilliant. I thought it was incredible. I think it may be the best Pixar movie.
I'm so glad to hear that.
It might be my favorite Pixar movie.
We've been seeing that trailer for a long time, and I found it impossible to believe the movie could be even passingly good just because it looks so much like a combination of, like, Book of Life and Kubo. But every person, like, to a person, is all saying what you're saying. So I'm going to try and keep my expectations muted, but we're going to see it this weekend.
It's really fucking good. I cried. I cried at the end, and it's a Pixar. It's a feels movie. You get all the feels.
Mm. You get all the feels. Was there a point when you turned over and whispered to your partner, that's Coco?
What did I did say that about? Oh no! So there's that goddamn 20-minute Frozen short beforehand, and I didn't
really
know.
Bad. I heard it was bad.
Well.
Veronica
really liked it and didn't like that everyone that we saw it with was making fun of it. And but she likes Frozen more than I do.
I think Veronica. I like the way that she rolls.
But I did when we were watching the Frozen short, and then the snowman came on. I did lean over and go, "That's Frozen." A little chappy. Chicago God ownership.
That's Baby Driver. That's the Baby Driver.
You know what? Are you trying to, like, maybe get it into Veronica's head? Like, I really think that you wrote dog, and you're like, maybe a dog.
Why would I have written that? I don't have a funny bit about dogs.
Do you want a dog?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because I don't have the lifestyle where I can give a dog a good life.
That's like, true.
Like cats, my cat already gets pretty stressed out for the amount that I travel, and I really think it's emotionally harder on a dogs are less self-sufficient, and they really emotionally suffer when their like owner isn't around.
I think that's true. I think it's totally true.
And I already, to be honest, this is going to be a popular opinion with our listeners. I already think it's a questionable decision to have a dog living in a city. Not saying it's wrong, but I think you should think about whether that's the best quality of life for a dog and whether that's how dogs are meant to live before you get a big dog in a little city apartment. So I would have those sort of feelings about it added to the amount that I travel, and I don't see it in the cards.
You get so much unconditional positive regard from people already.
Mm.
You know, you don't need a dog. Everybody
loves
Max. Is
that controversial, insulting people's pet ownership preferences?
No, I'm not going to agree with you because it's problematic. But it drives me crazy when you see people with these dogs that are like little horses because that's kind of a cool kind of dog to have. You know, a lot of people are secret cat people. They're secret cat people, and they want to overcompensate by getting a big dog and say, look at me, I'm big dog boy. I think that's a thing people do. They get a big horse dog, and they walk around, and they're living someplace like in 500 square feet, which is, you know, not unnormal for a big city flat or apartment.
It's like some sort of weird Victorian wealth display. It's like, look, I have so much food, I can afford to feed this large beast. It's not even a beast of labor.
I love my curvy dog for many years. I love a fat dog. I know it's not healthy. I know you're supposed to do all kinds of stuff, but I'd love to see a dog that can barely walk.
Did you ever see the beagle, the morbidly obese beagle named Kale Chips that was turned into the Chicago Adoption Center?
He was adopted, though.
But it has a happy ending, which is he did water aerobics and he lost a lot of weight. And then he got down, he became less morbidly obese, and then he was adopted by a family.
So fat.
He like couldn't walk.
So fat.
Look at this. Look at this. That question. Like what?
Look up Kale Chips Beagle.
I'm looking at him now. He's on a papasan and he's blobby. He's just melting. Look at those. Look at those toe beans. What a sweetie. That's a very curvy dog.
I mean, he's a cubic. He looks like a Minecraft. Bad. He looks like a Minecraft dog. It's just like two bricks put together.
This is like how I would draw a dog, like just a big.
Yeah, it's like a 6-year-old boy's drawing of a dog turned into a real dog. Look at him in his little floaties doing water aerobics. What a good boy.
Oh, look at that good boy. Oh, look at him. Oh, with the strap on. Yeah, like he's gonna run away. I think he's good. Why have I been bound like this? I have no desire to move. I will not bolt.
I wanted to get Kale Chips, too, when he was a social media sensation. I was like, I should go to the pound and look into adopting Kale Chips. Just add it to my cabinet of curiosities with the planetarium projector.
Put him next to Killer Queen in the planetarium. Yeah.
Eventually, I'll capture a superhero and put him behind glass and be like, finally, my collection is complete. Escape from this, Captain America.
And over here we have Sebastian Gorka. You should collect Sebastian
Gorka. No, he can't
Gorka.
Be captured. He has nine guns and a tourniquet that he can apply with one hand.
Uh-huh. It is I.
Oh, God.
I think you should do the San Francisco route. In San Francisco, you get pairs. Maybe siblings of the same kind of dog. I think you should get some kind of crazy, like genetically distorted, high maintenance dog, maybe with a skin condition. You get two of them and you give them a funny name.
I mean, that's kind of what we did with our cats. They're kind of like a comedy duo now. Because it's like, oh, you got the straight man with Ness, and then you got the big dummy, which is Francis. And yeah, they're great. They are a social media sensation. Up to 50 likes on Instagram. It's a very big deal, Merlin.
Does your partner agree with your frame of mind about how you identify these animals?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Matt would say that cat's a dummy. That Francis is a dummy.
Oh, God. And the worst part is, like, the other cat, like, frames him for doing shit. It's
My cat's been doing a thing. Okay, explain this, everyone. Mm. My cat's been doing a thing where, so we feed her. So let me explain how I feed my cat, because I'm a genius. Mm-hmm. So one of my big fears of getting a cat was, I've heard all these stories about how people's cats wake them up because they want to get fed. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that didn't happen to me this morning.
So here's I'm a genius. So here's what I figured out. I decided I'm never going to feed the cat when I wake up. And that way the cat won't associate me waking up with her getting food, and she won't give a shit when I wake up. So the way I make it work is, I feed the cat. It's the last thing I do before I walk out the door in the morning. So she really doesn't really have an association with me waking up, because I wake up, I putter around, I get in the shower, I read a magazine, I go on Twitter, and then finally I'm out the door, make my coffee, and then finally I'm out the door and I give her a can of mush.
See, I had that pattern down with the good cat, but now it's a choice between getting up and feeding a cat or being smothered and having an anus rubbed on my mouth.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm.
Interesting. That's a very aggressive tactic.
So I just kind of, sometimes I just throw
her. Does she trim her nails at least?
No. That was a good joke.
Okay, and then the other thing is, I feed the cat really late at night, like right before I go to bed, because the idea is if she eats late at night, she'll be less likely to wake me up for food in the morning. So lately she's been doing a thing where our cat also only eats wet food because she doesn't have any teeth. And lately what she's been doing is, she takes a little mouthful of the chicken mush and carries it in her mouth and comes up the stairs, up to the bedroom, and drops the chicken mush in a little parcel of chicken mush in the hallway outside of our bedroom. It's not like liquid. It's like gelatinous. So it's like you can still, it's like a can of cranberry sauce, and you can still see the outline of the can. Like, it still has like right angles on it. Mm-hmm. And she'll drop a little mouthful of the chicken mush outside of our bedroom and then just sit there and meow, just helplessly, like a kind of a frantic meowing, like a help me meow, like when she corners a bug.
What do you think it means?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. And she's done it a couple of times.
Is it a complaint? Is the cat lodging a complaint? Like, I don't like this particular mush?
maybe it's a compliment.
Maybe she wants to share with you. Like, here,
I heard
have
the
some.
Only way to train pets and men is to ignore the bad behavior and reward the good behavior. And then eventually patterns will be created out of that. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've heard. In that, so supposedly, you're on the right track, Max. That, like, it's us, like, capitulating to the animal that makes it develop those habits and saying, oh, when I do this thing, this happens, especially with cats.
Where, how is she coming up with that, though? Because, like, I'm, you know, right. I'm a creative person. I'm a maker. I sit there all day and I think of
yeah.
I love to read books. I sit there all day and I think of you know, funny bits like Chicago God Ownership, and it's never occurred to me to bring a mouthful of food up to the bedroom and just dump it on the floor and start crying.
Maybe you try that on her and see what happens. See what
Maria
happens.
Abramovic performance art.
The Max is present.
Merlin, are we going to talk about the notch in the room?
The what?
No.
Okay.
I'm officially not talking about it.
Okay. All right. You
can ask me in the after show, and I'll talk about only a little bit. But I'm officially not having an opinion about this.
Give us your fucking money.com.
Minecraft drama?
Yes. Yep, that's what it is.
Money.com. We're up to 1,660 patrons. Thank you, everybody, for giving us your fucking money.
What did he say now?
What?
Nothing. By notch, we mean a telephone.
The game guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
we're not talking about the bocce boy.
I'm with you. Okay. Merlin cocked himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Got it. People got posters. Posters are arriving. So sorry those weren't as fast as we'd hoped, but you should be having
No, they were exactly as fast as we hoped.
I apologize for apologizing.
Okay. Yeah. No, the
fuck,
things.
Fuck your expectations. Keep giving us your money. Thank you.
Oh, I know what Chicago.
Oh God!
I know what it is. I know what it is. It's follow up. It's follow up. Right. It's follow up. I know what it is. 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 Chicago God Ownership. It's Chicago dog ownership, meaning the Chicago hot dog. It's fucking follow forward. It's fucking follow through from your abominable, podcast where you were complaining about. But I also don't remember why I was, but it was all wrong. It was so wrong.
No.
How could you let John Syracuse get away with talking about Chicago hot dogs in that way? How could you let him get away with that? I'm not mad at him.
Thinking.
He doesn't know better. It's your fault.
I'm the one that should have said something. I owe you an amends.
I don't remember specifically what I was mad about, but he was talking about how Chicago people are
John
like.
John has that effect on people. Yeah.
Why was he?
You just know
so
you're mad. You're not sure
wrong
which part you're mad about.
God damn it, about the Chicago hot dog and fuck.
Why don't you spend a few minutes telling us a little bit about what you think, if you choose to, what are the important aspects about the Chicago-ness of the dog?
I remember. It's all coming back to me. Holy shit.
Oh,
I feel like I just did some sort of like a
did you do a cleanse?
I just took one of those
detox?
Like Alex Jones powders. Like I have a galaxy brain. I remember the whole thing now.
Oh no.
So John was saying it's just this arbitrary, like, man, you just get you put the sport peppers and the celery salt on there and it's just some arbitrary ingredients. Right? Why does Chicago have to own this hot dog? And I was fucking furious. People don't understand the provenance of the Chicago hot dog. It's like a food ethnography of Chicago. So every major, it's an amazing, it's an amazing thing. It's like all of these ingredients that were cultivated and brought to Chicago and became cheap because of the crazy hodgepodge of ethnic groups that were crammed into the city in like during the Great Depression. That became the Chicago dog. So you have like Mexican ingredients, like the sport, like the pickled peppers and the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. You have, I think the celery salt is like Polish or Hungarian or something like that. German. You have the hot dog itself. The sausage is German.
Where's the nuclear? Where's the nuclear? The nuclear green relish feels like a very Chicago dog thing. Why is it?
I think the relish. Yeah. I mean, so now that's a modern affectation. That's like a manufactured. You know, I think that's like a people have nostalgia for this food from the 70s or something like that. But originally, I think the relish is sort of a Polish food, right? Like a sort of sauerkraut.
Did I tell you my? I think I told you my anecdote. But you got me so excited about Chicago. I really like Chicago dogs. I'll even get a crappy one in the airport. Like I'm just excited to have them. In particular, sport peppers. We don't get a ton of here. In Florida, we used to get this really great thing, which is whenever you go to a barbecue joint, there'd be this little shaker bottle on the table with a bunch of little tiny green peppers and vinegar in it, and you get this pepper vinegar sauce.
Oh, I love that. I love that stuff.
It's kind of hard to get, but what's really hard is the poppy seed buns. And so I went to – you should try this yourself. You go to that Vienna site, mm-hmm. and they have a whole package they'll send you where you can get all of the official stuff. And I keep forgetting this, but yeah, I've gone on at least, I want to say two, probably three occasions. I go, I click, I add it to the basket, I go to checkout. And if memory serves, the packet itself is $45, and I think the shipping is $44.
Ooh.
And that's why I don't have poppy seed buns.
Hmm. Merlin, I'll send you poppy seed buns. They're made in Chicago from the Rosen Bread Company.
Rosen?
Rosen. That's the official. That's the best one that you want. You want a Rosen poppy seed bun. And 100% beef, all natural, natural casing Vienna beef.
Onion on too.
Now, what you're describing, I'm gonna get those Costco hot dogs the next time I go because they do sound pretty good from your description. Are they all beef?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, again,
it sounds like what you're describing that they're a little garlicky, a little better seasoned. It sounds like a Polish sausage. I've talked about that everyone should be eating Polish sausages.
I think you've talked about that given the opportunity between in the same brand, you say get the Polish sausage. That's more like a real actual
hot dog. If you have access to specifically a Vienna, I mean, Polish sausage can mean a lot of different things. To an older generation like our parents, a Polish sausage means half beef, half pork. And I don't like that. I don't think that's a good tasting sausage. But if you have the opportunity to get specifically a Vienna Beef brand Polish sausage, it's 100% beef. It's the same thing as a Vienna Beef hot dog, but just better seasoned and it has a natural casing. Upgrade. Get that Polish sausage. It's so fucking good.
Dugga, dugga, dugga. Dateline Business Insider, May 29, 2016. I might have found the best hot dog in America, and it's not where you'd expect. A stupid Business Insider. But this person stipulates that they think Costco is the best hot dog in America. The dog is unexpectedly flavorful. What is that noise? What does that noise mean?
I think...
Alexandra, why'd you make a noise at my hot dog?
You are talking about...
What are you
about...
buying this crap at the Costco for? I can't believe that Costco would have a good hot dog.
No, I love Costco, but is he talking about the one that you get at the little concession stand?
Hell yeah, I've had that hot dog. That's a good hot dog.
That's a good hot dog.
That's a great hot dog.
This is a business...
Pizza's not great, but the hot dog's good.
This is a Business Insider, like, oh, turns out, like, you can get the best...
Yeah, it's
a
Thomas Friedman type situation.
You know what? I'm going to be like my... God, I'm turning into my dad, but I would not surprise me if Costco had great hot dogs. That seems like exactly the kind of thing that they would randomly have good ones of.
The dog is unexpectedly flavorful. Gone is the bland, hollow taste of the average hot dog. Instead, a delightful, smoky taste pervades, similar to a kielbasa sausage, but not as fatty or rich. There's a slight charred taste to it that isn't overpowering. It's juicy, and there's a satisfying snap with every bite. I want this hot dog right now.
I might go to Costco for lunch.
I want hot dogs so much right now.
You know what I think my parents, and I think that old Jewish people say is a big compliment when you have something really good. Like if I cook something, they'll be like, this is so good, it tastes store-bought. It's so good.
That used to mean something different.
It's so good.
You know?
It tastes like it's from the sunset. It's so good.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. One time I had a friend who, my best friend when I was a kid, I realized in retrospect was a little bit on the spectrum. And a very, very best friend from childhood. Great, 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 great. Great guy. He came and stayed over one night, and my mom's like, oh, yeah, what do you want for breakfast? And I was like, I'll have a Pop-Tart, like I always have. And he's like, I want waffles. This is not a very interesting story, but it's a famous family story that my mom is like, oh, God, I haven't made waffles in like 15 years. I don't even know where the waffle iron is. She spends like an hour making waffles. He's like, ew, this isn't like the toaster kind, because all he wanted was an Eggo, because he had to have an Eggo every morning. It was really sweet. My poor mom. parents put up with so much.
This hot dog cost $1.50.
It's a loss leader. It's a loss leader.
Yeah, I guess so. They get well, you, enough people they get are you buying there, hot dogs.
You go to the Costco to get four folding chairs for Thanksgiving, and you walk out with a Dyson humidifier and a Seal-A-Meal. That's how they get you.
Did you hear that, I want to say Planet Money, about the history of Costco? It was really, really good.
Yeah, they don't make any money.
Well, they deliberately wanted it to be kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. They wanted it to be something that was sort of an event, and they came up with or adapted an idea that is, we don't want you coming in here and spending a little bit of money twice a week. We want you coming in and spending a lot of money once a month. And that is what drives their whole approach of like keeping it deliberately spare. The box thing, they could probably afford bags. That's just not part of their
you guys, I really think, okay, I have a couple of thoughts on this. Number one, I really think we should do a Costco challenge where we record an episode of Dubai Friday covertly in a Costco. So Merlin, you go to your Costco, we go to our Costco, we connect, we fucking go nuts, we record. And I think that would be very interesting. But number two, here's my other question. What are your big purchases? Like, what are your like, okay, I'm at Costco, I gotta get X. What are your big, you know, gotta get this?
Well, it just as a preamble, I don't like to talk about this, but I have leveraged the gig economy in my life. I rarely go to the grocery store anymore because it makes me so sad inside. In the days when I did, we were
told. Wait, you don't
go
to Costco?
Our gig economy service will go to Costco for
you. Wow. Which one is that? The Postmates?
Couldn't say. and so,
don't they have to have a card?
They got a card. I don't have a card. Mm-hmm. I don't. What am I? What am I going to buy? A casket? Like, what am I going to get? No, I'm good. Like, I don't. You've seen the caskets?
Yeah, I want one so bad. I don't know why.
I just want the display. Max, that'd be so good for your collection. It's a modest. Looks like a primary school science project, and it's the corners of like four caskets. You should get that.
I love walking up and down the aisles of the Costco, mm-hmm. and I stop and I look at these items, and I'm like, how would I incorporate that into my life? Like, oh, a box of 300 highlighters for 25 cents. Well, how would I do with that?
Going to Costco is always like a celebratory childhood event because we'd go like every couple of weeks. And actually, my family of 7, 8 plus the dog, we spent so much money there that we opened a business account.
Wow.
And there's a lot of us. You need a lot of hot dogs, but then you go down that aisle that's basically a giant table full of books, and I would just kind of like sneak them in the cart because, you know, along with the big box of highlighters, you don't notice a Dan Brown novel in there. It worked out quite well.
Dan Brown's book strode purposefully into the cart. Its eyes were like eyes.
I was like 8 years old. Come on.
They've got so much good stuff there. I'll tell you some things I like a lot. It's not as good as it used to be, but obviously the champ is the Costco rotisserie chicken, which is a good-ass chicken. That's a good-ass. If you get a hot chicken when it's coming out, that's really good. You know, their beef is surprisingly good.
What do you mean their beef?
They have pretty...
Like raw beef?
Steaks. Yeah. Like they've got good, pretty good cuts. Not prime,
so. You go to the Costco.
Like,
you get a bunch of beef, Seal-A-Meal.
I do. I Seal-A-Mealed three steaks last night.
What do you dry age or do you do anything to them or?
Are you curious?
Yeah.
I can tell you about my rib roast. Please. Oh, I cooked the shit out of a rib roast.
Okay, go. I have my notes. Go.
Okay. Rib roast. You get rib roast. You know, you think you need more than two ribs. For a family our size, two ribs is way too much. Like, even one rib would be fine. I get that. I very carefully, if they don't do this at the butcher shop, our butcher shop will do this on request, cut the bone away, and I will put it on
wait
a baker's
minute, wrap. Wait a minute. I go to the butcher shop in the Costco.
Do you want to talk about Costco?
Well, wait a minute. Why are we talking about rib roast if I can't get it at Costco?
Well, you can. Okay, here's the deal. You can age other cuts too. You could do a. Let's say you get a Chateaubriand. The rule of thumb, I think, is about 1 day per pound. I wouldn't do it for more than 3 or 4 days, but just put it on a rack on a baker's rack, like one of those little wire deals.
Yeah.
With like a you can put.
I did that the last time I got steaks, and they were surprisingly incredible. They were incredible.
Especially if you do it to something like a ribeye and you get a lot of that moisture out of it. Oh man, it's so good. What else do we get?
There was a little sale on ribeyes at the Whole Foods butcher, and I got like 6 ribeyes, and I made one the night that I got them and froze the rest. Or no, I dry aged them for 5 days and then froze them. And as compared to the one that I had straight from the store versus the dry aged ones, they were so much more tender and flavorful. and cooked and like got more crispy when I
no,
finished
you're
them.
You know what? You nailed it. That's exactly right. Like when you sear it, it sears really well. I used to like to get lots of office supplies because it's a good place for office supplies at the Costco.
Can you finish you're putting more things on the stack. Could you finish your fucking rib roast recipe? I'm ready.
I think it's kind of boring.
Edit this out. I want to know. Max wants to know. So what do you go to your butcher, rib roast, bone out?
Well, I like the bone to be on, but what I'll do is, and I would prefer a butcher do this because I tend to massacre it. I'm not a good cutting man. Mm-hmm. But you'll trim right at the level of the bone on a curve. You trim the bone away from the meat part, mm-hmm. all the way to like when the big joint thing happens. You want to leave the bone on.
So bone on, but trimmed. But then,
Yeah, because later on when you're gonna roast this or sous vide it, you're gonna want to put some garlic in that area. That's a good place to put garlic and salt and stuff.
It's a little crevice.
It's a meat pocket that you can jam into which you can jam your garlic pieces and your spices and whatnot.
Oh my god!
And so I have a pretty straightforward meat recipe that I use in some variation for lots of these. So yeah, I'll leave it in there 3-4 maybe 5 days. I don't want to get
gamey. You sous vide it and then you
if you're doing sous vide, you've got a really good setup, so you're probably good. But for most people in a home sous vide environment, this is not fun. But you're going to want to cut it into smaller, like giant super steaks, basically. Because if you're trying to do it in a pot for a lot of people, that's not going to work. You got me to get one of those big, like 5-gallon things.
You get the Cambro.
Which is what I use for something large. Yeah, okay, I got the Cambro. Got the pasta Cambro.
Yeah.
And then what I'll do is lots of kosher salt. Oh, and I get these silicone rubber bands. Silicone, rubber bands, right? But you don't put those on yet. Lots and lots of kosher salt. I like inside the meat pocket, I like to put thyme and rosemary.
God, this is making me hungry. There. Oh my God, this sounds so
and
good.
Now John Siracusa doesn't like this. We get those Whole Foods garlic ice cubes. Where it's garlic that's been
Merlin, no.
Chopped
Merlin,
into,
no.
No, I don't like my hands to smell. Anyway, you jam some garlic on there. Now, depending on how you want it, now here's another trick. I think you could do something as simple as kosher salt and pepper on the meaty meat part. But what I'm going to tell you, you could also then put more thyme. You could put, if you like Italian parsley and that kind of shit, you could put that on there. A fun trick to try. If you like a little bit of spice, is get you some
Merlin,
like creamy
horseradish. We need to have an intervention on you buying this processed garlic. I can't believe you're buying this.
Okay,
why not? Why have it at all? It doesn't taste like garlic.
Yeah. Okay. It tastes like
wood chips. It's not good. It's like a sulfury wood chip. They're really bad.
Wood chip. Okay. And then what you can do is you cover the whole meaty top part.
I feel like you're saying okay, but you're going to keep buying frozen garlic.
No, I know.
Why
I'm always looking for a new thing to stop doing.
Can I tell you something? Do you ever just smash a garlic with like the flat part of your knife?
I know how.
Because your fingers don't smell like the garlic.
Well, you can also rub it on a spoon.
It's not that.
If you rub your hands on a spoon after garlic, it won't smell.
It makes it better. It helps. But I don't understand that. It's like, why just not have the garlic then?
That's not how get a show with Siracusa. You can cover the whole top.
We need to have some sort of garlic intervention for you.
Oh, my gosh.
No intervention. Okay, you know what? You get a clove of it. I don't know if we use enough fast enough. In the ice cube, you pop it out. Room temperature for a second, and you get garlic. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And you can freeze all your herbs too.
Dig Dug, we gotta stop. We gotta stop with the food because I'm so hungry.
How do you make a rib roast, Alex?
No comment. Max, what are we still in follow up in front matter?
I don't know.
Student emails? What?
Oh, do you guys ever get this? This is I'm really mad about the garlic. I really am upset about the garlic.
Oh my god.
This is. You think it really makes that? You think it makes a difference to have fresh garlic?
It really tastes bad. I mean, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's like it actually. It's not that it's like a worse
it's a
version
bit sulfury,
of garlic.
Kind of a sulfur.
It's
taste.
Bad. It's like a bad. It like adds a bad taste to the food. Anyway, whatever.
Have you ever tried it? You get it at the Whole Foods.
I grew up with that fucking abomination of that.
It's not the size.
I grew up with that little
cube.
Glass jar. My parents would always get that glass jar of minced garlic in like formaldehyde.
Oh, that's handy. You don't have to cut it up.
Oh my god!
These little cubes are about the size smaller than a sugar cube.
I thought I didn't like garlic
out.
For a long time because of how bad that was. Yeah. Anyway,
what have they done to you, Max?
So, do you guys ever get emails from students who are like, "Can I interview you for my class project?"
Yes.
What do you? They're so they're infuriating because they're like. So I get a lot of these. I'll get like a couple of these a week. And it's like, they're like, would you just help me a little old student and like answer my questions about the thing, and then they always want to ask, like, how'd you come up with Cards Against Humanity? And it's like, well,
where do you get your ideas?
Yeah, it's like, I don't have any, like, I can't answer that in the time frame that I'm allowed to do this interview, that I can do this interview with you in. So I got one this day. What do people ask you, Alex?
They ask the same thing. Like, what's it? They want to know what it's like working in Cards Against Humanity. And I always say,
no,
I don't have a time. No.
You say no?
No. Okay.
And Merlin, what do you do? Do you get them?
It depends on factors. But generally, I will. I don't get them so much anymore. I'm not really that famous anymore. But first of all, a lot of people just want to be a friend and say hi and reach out and have a little moment. And I think that's a nice thing to give, especially to a young person. I think it's very important to do that. What broke me, much like the cubes of garlic broke you, is a time in my pseudo-career when I would get lots of questions from idiots who were on deadline at the last minute and were looking for a quote. And I know that's not the same thing, but that made me a little bit angry and broken inside. I got so sick of people calling me to basically keep me on the phone until I gave them the quote that they needed for something. So if it's somebody who really has like an interest and a curiosity about some topic that I can offer assistance on, I love that. But I don't want to just be like another footnote or a talking head. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you have to be supportive of young people. Unless they're collectors. Be careful of the collectors, because the collectors are out there. It might have been a collector, so be careful.
Oh, he wants to put me in his little museum? Don't put me behind glass. Well, I told you the story of the first... So when I met Roderick for the first time a couple years ago on the Joko cruise, I was trying to think of some inn, you know, so I could go up and say hi and not be a crazy person. And we wound up, I think we were sitting together at dinner or something, and I was like, oh, John, I'm a big fan, and I'm friends with your podcast co-host, Merlin. And John takes a long beat and kind of looks me up and down and sort of sizes me up, and he goes, real life friends or internet friends?
Ouch. Please don't make me apply that.
He nailed me. And then I just had to sulk away. I think I just crawled under the table. Anyway, here's my email from Dayton. Dear Mr. Temkin, Hello, I am making a school project and I wanted to ask you one quick question. Do you think teens should play inappropriate games? In this case, Cards Against Humanity. Thanks for your time, Dayton.
That went in a very different direction now, than I thought it would.
Now, yeah. I'm no, you know, press expert. But do you think he's working?
He digs his thumbs into his suspenders.
I'm just a simple country lawyer. But
I'm just a simple country obscene car developer.
But do you think this guy's working an angle?
Yeah.
So I just replied. So he goes, do you think teens should play inappropriate games? In this case, Cards Against Humanity. I think this guy might be part of Project Veritas. I think he might be.
Oh my God, it's a jam up. Well, you probably haven't gotten to this episode yet.
I think he's leaning into me and he's got the little flower lapel and he's like, please answer into my lapel.
Speaking of my giant cowboy
hat. I just replied back and I said, no, Max.
Oh, geez. Well, you haven't gotten to this episode yet, probably, but a recent Roderick on the line, Roderick got one of his offers to like basically be an MC. Long story short,
yes.
There was a chance to interview Dan Harmon. Mm-hmm. And all the questions, such as they were, you heard this, Alex?
Yep, the paragraph questions.
paragraph long questions that were obviously written by a sophomore in college, which is the worst kind of person. And but wouldn't you agree that it's those kind of like, there's certain kinds of questions that give somebody the opportunity to say something interesting, and other kinds of questions that already feel like kind of a trap. Perhaps a better question for Dayton might have been, do you have an idea of when it's appropriate for people to play a game? Like, how would you suggest guidance to young people or parents on when it's right to play this game?
Right.
That gives you an opportunity to go lots of different places. But like when you ask people like these yes, no questions or whereas Roderick said, I really don't like those questions where you're like, well, you know what? There's five different things about your question that I will not stipulate to. And so I can't really answer that question. You know, when did you stop beating your wife with your other wife? You know,
my actual feeling on this is that of course, it depends on the kid, because like when I was a teenager, I'm thinking of like when I was like, you know, 12 or 13 or whatever, I really should not have been playing cards. You know, I had Cards Against Humanity existed. Right. I was sort of too excitable and upsettable, and I really shouldn't have been playing it. You know, I was way too sort of emotionally young to be playing that. However, I had peers in school who were fucking smoking cigarettes and pouring sugar in the principal's gas tank and, you know, riding their motorcycles home and, you know, going on dates and stuff and, like, you know, picking up girls at bars. And they could have played Cards Against Humanity. It wouldn't have affected them. So it depends on the kid.
Yeah, but it's there's another part of it. And I suffer from this as, like, a dad who has exercised some influence over my kids' taste. But one problem is when you try to make two leaps at a time, two or more leaps at a time, where it's one thing to say, like, hey, you know, you're five, I think you'd enjoy the Star Wars movie. And it's another thing, like, in, the thing with Cards or stuff like that is that it requires a great breadth of knowledge about a lot of things to get why that feeling of, not offense, being offended, but that feeling of, like, being provoked and, like, oh my, you are a caution, Cards Against Humanity. Like, why that feeling comes to you is because you go, oh, they're upending these certain conventions about things that we all know. And I think you, when you skip too many levels, like, you rob a person of the chance to, like, get to understand, like, why that's funny. Do you know what I'm saying? Like if you put your kid right into a Rick and Morty or whatever, they're not going to, I mean, in addition to being inappropriate, they won't get a lot of it. So now you're going to explain to your kid what felching is or whatever?
Well, it's like, you can't, no, you can't start, it's position. Like, kids today, they're not watching, like, scrambled Showtime softcore pornography. They're watching, like, straight, like, hardcore, like, streaming anal. Like, they're not even
getting... What age do you think is appropriate? What age is appropriate to start with hardcore streaming porn for a kid?
Oh, I don't think I don't think you get to... Oh, boy. I just listened to that John Ronson thing, The Butterfly Effect. Holy shit, it was good. It was so good. With the guy smashing the stamps.
The girl smashing the stamps.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm thinking about porn all the time. It really is... It is this huge upheaval in the social fabric of America that nobody talks about, and it is, like, so clearly affecting, like, every aspect of American life and childhood and sexuality and stuff. Crazy. And it's just like a...
Well, in a way where you can't draw... It's difficult to draw a straight line, but, like, you know, down to, like, you know, doing a sexy dance and putting up the video. It's like, well, how did you decide to do that, you know? There's always, like, one kid in my kid's class who's watching way too much YouTube and stuff that kid shouldn't be watching. And they like to be the one who becomes the Pied Piper or the town crier about the new dirty word.
What's with those weird, the whole news story? I kind of missed this, but...
That
but
was weird.
There's this news story about the weird YouTube videos where it's like, Caillou's getting, like, eaten by clowns or something like that. Like, I don't fully understand
that. Well, there's at least a couple angles to it. One of the angles is that clearly there's always going to be trolls who want to provoke and upset people. The way more interesting story, and I can't put my hand to it right now, but this one very interesting story was, why are there these, like, weirdly random things about this certain kind of toy with these certain kinds of characters? And the thrust of that story was that the ideas for plots or videos, these short videos that are being produced in mills, basically, the concepts are algorithmically derived, but they're being acted out by real people. So if you get something that's like, Genie rubs a bottle and, you know, cum shoots out on Anna or whatever, like, that was something in an algorithm produced that. So it's being regarded by a lot of people as this tipping point of, like, holy shit, now we really are doing what the algorithm says. And the actors don't have any thought or any kind of, like, you know, the actors just do what they're told to do.
Right. And suddenly they're in a frozen vor fetish video. New York Times, Bangkok, Panarat Chiaboon was using the toilet in her downstairs bathroom in July when she felt sharp bite on her thigh. She jumped up to see a scene straight out of a nightmare, an 8-foot python emerging from her toilet. She rushed to the hospital bleeding heavily and still bears the marks from 8 tooth punctures that were around her half an inch deep. The snake was captured, but a week later, Miss Paranat's 15-year-old daughter found a second python in the same toilet. The daughter was so shaken, she went to stay with relatives. It could be argued that snakes have always owned this corner of Thailand and that the people of Bangkok are merely borrowing it from them. But it's basically an article about snakes in the toilet. I just thought I would share that with you guys.
Huh.
Do you guys ever check for a snake in the toilet?
Yes.
What do you check for in a toilet, Alex? What are you looking for?
I don't know. It's
like driver's ed where you learn to walk around the car before you get in and start the engine. Do you like to go in and just like see what the environment's going to, what you're facing?
Well, I mean, have you ever sat on a toilet before looking directly into it? It's like looking into the eyes of God. You just want to know. I don't know.
I always look in the back of a car before I get in. If I'm like my car's parked and absolutely. I'm getting in the car, I always take a peek because you don't want there to be a clown with a butcher's knife back there
with a hook for a hand.
You don't want to find that out while you're already on the highway.
I'm hooky.
Yeah. Hi. Let's can I can I ask you a few questions for my class?
What do you think of Vorpal?
I'm hooky.
But. You want to see me eat a clown with a hook for a hand?
I bet there's a YouTube video of a clown with a hook for a hand.
So I always look in the back of a car to make sure that there's not a clown with a hook for a hand. And you always look in a toilet before, especially if you're going to sit down on the toilet. Boy, you get your little cell phone flashlight and you look down there for a second. And you make sure there's not going to be any sort of snake or lamprey or any sort of creature that could come swimming up.
I'm wondering, do you, let's say that there is something in a toilet before you use it. Will you flush beforehand?
What do you mean something?
Anything. Paper, excrement, whatever. Like in a public
clean bowl. You like to go in and make sure that you got a clean bowl.
I'm wondering because I've been shamed for, you know, flushing before. I don't want to piss on someone else's shit. It's very weird to me.
Don't yuck there, yum.
I just don't
piss on your shit. I spit on your piss.
We should start saying that. Don't piss on. You know how yuck? Don't yuck my yum. We should start saying don't piss on my shit. Yeah.
Especially when it says like a low flow toilet, like save the. I'm like, God damn, no. You flush your toilet. That's an entire amount of drinking water for a day.
I think you got to give that to yourself, Alex. If you like to know that you want to feel like you're the first resident, I understand why you want to do that. I don't understand why you look down into the bowl while you're on.
Okay. I don't like stick my head in there. Like you can see it at a normal height.
See what?
If there's anything in there.
But like this is before you sit down, Merlin. You look down in the bowl and you if it's dark.
Alex described it as like an ongoing situation where she's like on the border with Korea and she's like looking down, making sure that no vores come up while she's there.
Well, okay. Well, at night it's kind of a different situation.
Also, I don't know
because
what a vore is.
Merlin. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
Google image search vore.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh no.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe I did know this and I decided to forget it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you hear the yes, yes, no about that Tumblr site,
yep.
Max?
Yeah.
Okay. Similar thing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, is it vor? Is it not vor? Do you just put it in your mouth? Are we just tying up the princess? Like, what's happening on this Tumblr?
I just want to put her hair in my mouth. Just Rapunzel. That's why she cut off her hair. She was
That's
like,
right.
No.
She just didn't want to be harassed by Flynn Rider the hair eater anymore.
Follow up. Washington Post. Donald Trump Jr. had just posted a batch of private messages he exchanged with WikiLeaks during last year's campaign, confirming reports that he communicated with the website that published stolen Democratic emails obtained by Russian military intelligence. Quote, more nothing burgers from the media and others desperately trying to create false narratives, the president's oldest son wrote on Instagram. Keep coming at me, guys. Over the course of the week, Trump Jr. went on to tweet or retweet criticism of his father's 2016 Democratic rival, Hillary Clinton, actor George Takei, Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, and former Vice President Joe Biden, sharing unsubstantiated claims about him from an anonymously sourced blog post. Trump Jr. referred questions about his activities on Twitter to the family's private company, which did not respond to requests for comment. His brother Eric Trump said in a statement that, quote, Don and I are totally dedicated to running our family business, the Trump Organization, which has been an incredible experience. Oh, wait, there's more. Hang on.
He's sucking on Rapunzel's hair.
While our sole focus remains on the business, our father has been the most important job in the world, and we could not be more proud of all that he has accomplished in his first year, he said to the Washington Post. Quote, Don and I will always remain his biggest advocates and supporters.
My father is a very smart
man. The article
he gets the History Channel but doesn't have time to watch it, but knows it all anyway because he's read all books.
Quote, Don barely...
like he's turning into a gauntlet.
Quote, Don barely talks to his father, and they barely see each other, said one person close to him who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss private conversations. Quote, it weighs on him. It does. It didn't really hit him until laying the wreath before inauguration that this is so much bigger than us and that they're going to have to make sacrifices. Amid his angry online missives are nostalgic posts about the president, whom he dressed up for. He dressed up as for Halloween. Don Jr. dressed up as Donald Trump for Halloween. On the anniversary of the election win, Trump Trump Jr. posted photos of the two hugging and what he called, quote, his favorite piece of campaign memorabilia, an electoral map signed, great job, thanks, Dad.
Oh, my God. Please, all fathers out there, please let your children know they're loved. Please do it while there's still a window for fixing
this.
In one video,
Trump Jr. says he, quote, had the privilege of being able to fly with his father to the White House. He can be seen in the helicopter window's reflection as the president walks away.
Oh, God.
Also,
isn't that kind
you know,
of, it's
know,
kind of heartbreaking.
It's beyond heartbreaking.
It's very Fredo.
It reminds me of the interview. It was a while ago, and I forget what the context was, but it's like, what was it like growing up with Donald Trump? And he responded with, well, he was like a father. That's all he could say. And it's like,
you know about the dorm room incident, right?
No, what was that?
Oh, boy, this is really good. Let me find this. A former classmate of Donald Trump Jr.'s wrote a Facebook post on Wednesday explaining why he thinks Donald Trump is unfit to be president. In his post, he wrote that Trump Jr. was drunk throughout much of his college career at University of Pennsylvania and that he once witnessed Trump slap Trump Jr. so hard that he fell to the ground while Trump Jr.'s entire freshman dorm watched.
Oh, shit.
Here's what he wrote. I was hanging out in a freshman dorm with some friends next door to Donald Jr.'s room. I walked out of the room to find Donald Trump at his son's door there to pick him up for a baseball game. There were quite a few students standing around watching, trying to catch a glimpse of the famed real estate magnate. Don Jr. opened the door wearing a Yankee jersey. Without saying a word, his father slapped him across the face, knocking him to the floor in front of all of his classmates. He simply said, put on a suit and meet me outside, and closed the door.
It's going to suck when we find out that Eric's the smart one.
Donald Jr. was... Donald
it's
Jr.
suck so hard.
The post goes on. Donald Jr. was a drunk in college. Every memory I have of him is stumbling around campus, falling over, passed out in public with his arm in a sling from injuring himself while drinking. He absolutely despised his father and hated the attention that his last name afforded him. His nickname was, quote, Diaper Don because of his tendency to fall asleep drunk in other people's beds and urinate. I always felt terrible for him.
Oh, is that real news?
This is a Facebook quote from the guy who went to college with
Facebook.
Him. Why would you?
It is Facebook.
Why
yes.
would you?
You can't lie on Facebook.
It must be true. Come on, Diaper Don.
Diaper Don.
He would fall asleep in people's beds and piss himself. Also a classic sign of sociopathy. Wetting the bed.
Is that right?
Yes. Wetting the bed up until an old age. It's a classic sign that many sociopaths exhibit.
Many people have asked me about my diapers. They like talking to me.
My favorite thing with him is like, hey, that's right. I'll show you the emails. Here's the emails.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, we've seen like 9 emails from him and they're all terrible. Like, imagine what else is in there. I know this is not a new idea, but it's so chilling when he's like, yeah, no big NBD. Here's those emails you heard.
It's a fascinating. It's a perfect arbitrage on this like moment of political discourse because all of the smoke and heat around that is wondering what's in the emails and the speculation of the idiot media trying to figure out what's in them. And we sort of know, although the media's, you know, like it's good journalism to not be like, well, we're pretty sure it's this. I mean, we are pretty sure that it's like, you know, for example, that he was coordinating with like WikiLeaks to post their stupid conspiracy theories. So it's like, they're not supposed to come out and say, yeah, we're pretty sure this is what it is. So they're like, well, what, anything could be in those emails. And then it's like, you know, smoke and heat. And it is a really good, like, arbitrage on that media climate to just post them because then the media story goes away. But, of course, a lot of what he posts is evidence of illegality. So the problem is the reason that that's such a brilliant tactic is we don't have any enforcement mechanism to make him pay for doing something illegal. Like, in theory, that's right. Where you have congressional oversight and independent agency oversight, and that stuff is all compromised. It's really it's really upsetting. So and the media is like slightly too like you know, addle-minded to like once the mystery is solved, once we know what's in the emails, to like figure out how it's a story. You know what I mean? It's like
mischief managed. Yeah.
It's like if like, it would be like there would be no would, there would be no Woodward and Bernstein if Nixon just like went on the radio and like said what he did, right? But he had a Republican Congress who wouldn't prosecute him. It's a crazy. It's like, well, that, yeah, of course. Well, then you wouldn't have that you know, whatever multi-year investigative detective story.
Are you listening to the new Nixon podcast?
I didn't even know this existed.
It is in our super secret text channel. Oh,
I listened to the bonus
Slow Burn,
episode
by Slate.
Martha.
And yeah, Martha, just about this woman who is the wife of not an aide, I forget who it was.
Martha Mitchell.
Yep.
Sorry, let the old man speak. Martha Mitchell was the wife of John Mitchell, who was kind of the one of the heads of the operation, former attorney general, heavily involved. He was kind of the linchpin. Like, if you go back and watch, you know, he's one of the main players that led to things kind of turning up. And he had this wife named Martha, who was talkative and very, very interesting. Sorry, I'm trying to throw back to you, Alex. Tell us about Martha.
Well, that's the thing. Did you know about Martha? Because,
of course I did. Well, I'm 51.
Well, I guess that's the thing. Like, I was listening to this podcast and hearing this story about this woman who would call reporters.
It was so cute. They were both like, oh my God, there's so much stuff I don't know about Watergate. Oh my God. I was sharing this thing about Watergate and I learned about John Mitchell.
Sorry.
And it was super interesting. Well, like, you guys, you're not allowed to do what turns out about this. It's
okay,
crazy.
Well, never mind.
Oh my God, did you know there was presidents after Washington? This is so fucking real.
Well,
real AF.
Is your kid gonna remember Scaramucci? Is your kid gonna remember Steve Bannon?
Like, I got followed by that bastard again for the second time. I had to soft block him a second time. Jesus fuck, Mooch.
Well, she's gonna
History podcast is gonna be about this era that takes place in, you know, that's made in 50 years is gonna be fucking insane, because they're gonna be like, Wednesday, November 28th, this was a crazy day in American politics. Trump appointed a federal judge, allowed his nominee to take over the Consumer Protection Bureau, like subverting the norms and procedures of the department. And Drill was doxxed by Homestuck fandom on Tumblr. Like, people are going to be like, wait, what? Like, what the fuck does this mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
So setting aside that you could just take, like, you know, you do that thing where you wake up every morning, you're like, oh, shit, I guess I better look at Twitter. It's like, you could do a whole a season of a history podcast on 12 hours of what the man said on Twitter. It's that part, I'm still not over it. I'm still not over the typos. I'm still not over the way that, like, he is clearly, we're not even getting into all the articles that came out this week about how badly he is clearly spiraling into dementia. But, like, any 12 hours of what the man said untethered on social media would be an entire, like, that's a whole season of a TV show. Just retweeting the Muslim videos.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. We're a nerd at this point, but, like, let's not always be too a nerd, because this is fucking crazy.
All right, we gotta get this thing moving. Let's talk about the challenge. Alex, you get a flu shot? Is my challenge. The challenge was get a flu shot. Alex, did you get a flu shot?
You know what? I'm going to throw it to Merlin. Merlin, you got a flu shot?
Uh-oh, Alex, you can't have not gotten a flu shot.
I got a shot of something.
What'd you get?
Merlin, did you get
a flu
shot?
Wait a minute, what'd you get?
Alex, keep talking.
Well, yeah. Oh, man, this is going to be another weird Alex health story. I'm sorry. Good Lord. So, yesterday I did a thing. I've had the same protein bar like every day for 2 weeks and it's been totally fine. But yesterday, I don't know, there must have been a tree nut in it. There must have been something. And this occasionally happens. It happened a couple weeks ago after we were recording. I had a severe allergic reaction and I had to use my EpiPen for the first time yesterday. Wow.
What happened? What reaction did you have?
It was an allergic reaction.
What was happening? You were couldn't breathe.
My throat started to close up. So then I'm like, oh, I guess this is what my EpiPen is for. Because normally I just like puke up a whole bunch. And then Like the package said no tree nuts, so I don't know what's wrong with me. But so I stabbed
you poor
myself.
Kid. But look, Max, look how she cucked us. She went up this.
Yeah,
this.
So I stabbed myself in the office bathroom. That was fun. And,
you didn't call me to watch?
Yeah, no. I was not gonna tell anybody. Hey, I gotta take off my pants and stab myself in the thigh.
I didn't realize the pants yeah. had to come off.
No, well, my jeans don't go up that far, and then. Yeah, Kara's passing me Benadryl under the bathroom door.
Oh, no, you poor kid.
But no, and I was like, no, it was fine, everything. This was in the late afternoon, and I'm
did
like,
okay. Did
you get
to record it for the podcast?
You know,
yeah. I recorded mine.
Well, but I was like, oh, I woke up around like 8 o'clock. I'm like, I feel much better. I'm glad that I have, I guess, this life-saving device with me. And I went to Walgreens and said I would like a flu shot. Please. And they're like, all right, have you had any allergic reactions in the past in the past 2 weeks? And I said, yes. And they said they would not give me a flu shot. And I didn't know why. They couldn't really explain it to me. And I'm like, no, this is bullshit. So I went, and at this point it's 8 o'clock, but the we're in Chicago. There's 24-hour Walgreens pharmacies. So I drove like 15 minutes to another Walgreens, and they didn't ask me any questions. They just said, all right, yep, let's give you a flu shot. But then they asked, are you allergic to latex? Which, surprise, yes. I'm like, I am. And they did not have any Band-Aids that were not latex, so I didn't get a flu shot. Well, they were out.
What a journey.
Yeah, and so but okay, no, and then this morning I went back to the regular Walgreens that I go to hoping it would just be a different person, and they're like, well, are you going to be traveling in the next week or so? And I was like, yeah. So at that point, I'm like, I'm just so with God.
You went above and beyond.
Yeah, I was going to make fun of you for not doing this challenge, but you actually did. You did.
So I got a shot.
Tell me about the EpiPen. Tell me about the EpiPen. Oh, what does it feel
okay,
like?
Okay,
I'm fascinated by this.
This, it feels like, you know how there was always that kid in class. I don't know if this was the case for you, Merlin, but there was always that kid in class that was allergic to something. I'm like slowly becoming that kid. Like, I need to get, I have no idea what the fuck is wrong with me. So an EpiPen is just this, like, it kind of looks like a sonic screwdriver. It's pretty cool. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, look, I'm this nerd kid who has the cool toy. But I don't know how to describe it because I've never like plunged anything into a muscle before. And it's all hazy because I had a lot of Benadryl. Like, it hurt a whole lot, but then I felt a whole lot better very quickly. So I highly recommend EpiPens if you can afford them. But now I'm kind of mad because I have to spend $500 for another EpiPen, I guess.
Oh my God. Yeah. Is that because of that guy? The guy didn't. Is it that guy?
The Wu-Tang guy.
Right. Oh, Jesus, Alex.
Pharma bro.
We didn't have allergies when I was a kid. Yeah. Allergies were invented fairly recently, but there would be the sort of like, who's the kid on The Simpsons, the really pale kid with the lines under his eyes? There would always be like one like sickly kid in the class, like special lunch kid, mm-hmm. and you feel so bad for him. Because I'm not saying that, please don't email me. It's just that the whole like allergy thing, there was allergies to grasses that we all knew about. I don't think we knew about all of those allergies. So kids were probably getting sick and we didn't know why because we didn't have a name or a way to test it. We just didn't have that as much when I was a kid.
Now
it seems like it's everywhere now.
I used to like roll my eye like I want peanuts on planes. Why can't I have my peanuts on planes anymore? And now I'm like, should I choose between these psych meds that make me function as a human being or being able to eat a candy bar without dying?
So you got to do
boring.
A lot of balancing.
It's boring.
It sounds really difficult. A lot of balancing.
Nah, it's fine.
Yeah. All right.
I scheduled an appointment for December 12th, and I will be getting a flu shot eventually. The end. All right, done. Alex's story
now,
complete.
Merlin, you were a soldier. You were fucking soldier. You went and got that shot. I saw a picture of it.
Yeah. Geez, this seems like pretty piddling stuff. So my nephew got married yesterday afternoon, and we got my kid out of school a little bit early. Went downtown. And we went to the wedding at City Hall with all the family. It was really nice. And I had on some big boy clothes and khaki pants and stuff. And then we had some drinks afterward. And then we went to the brand new CVS. It was the second day that this CVS has been open, literally.
Mm.
And it was so nice. It's so much, you guys, it's so much nicer than our Walgreens.
I kept looking
it's
at
really,
the
really,
wall
really nice.
Being like, wow, this has like a real doctor's office design. And
Let me see if I can find some more. Oh, here's me looking handsome in a Ministry of Supply shirt and two devices on my wrist.
I wasn't going to comment on it. I wasn't going to say, oh, I see there's a Fitbit there. Hmm.
Rolling a Ted Cruz. I like to have two devices on my wrist. hair. and so I did it. I went in. You know, I had a couple old fashions, and I was like, it's time to get a fucking flu shot. I've never gotten a flu shot before, which my daughter cannot believe because she's had all of the flu shots.
Oh,
I don't think I've ever
really?
Had a flu shot before. Mm. I was very phobic of needles as a kid. I think needles are getting finer. I'm jumping ahead a little bit because I barely felt this thing. Yeah, but I went up. I went to the CVS and said, hey, give me a flu shot for my podcast. And they said, okay, sir, fill this out. And I filled that out. It was $41. And I had to take off my shirt a little bit, and then they gave me a shot. And I still got the Band-Aid right here. It was a breeze.
Did it hurt?
I don't know what
did
they
it
put
hurt?
In my
did
body.
Get, did you get
like,
sick afterwards? Did you have any, like, issues?
I asked about that. My wife says that's a myth, and I asked this very unpleasant pharmacist if that was true. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people, they want to be a character. This guy likes to be a character.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, he's a character, mm-hmm. and I don't want a character giving me a shot. But anyway, he said, no, you may get a little bit of a fever, but it's not true or isn't true today or this year that people get sick. Because I always heard you get a cold or you get a little flu when you get a flu shot is what I had always heard.
I have gotten that before, but it's always been like a minor reaction to the shot itself. I've never been like, oh God, I've got the flu. Like,
how do you handle shots? And this kind of feeds into what we're talking about here with the whole EpiPen situation. How are you with needles in general?
I'm fine. I get my
really?
Blood yeah. drawn all the time. Yeah, people can poke me. I'm good.
I hate needles. I've always been scared of needles. It's like a very I think it's my worst irrational phobia because there's not really any reason to be afraid of needles. Like, they really don't actually hurt that much.
I mean, the side effects, like if you know, if there's even a little bit of an air bubble in that flu shot, you're really fucked up.
But that's probably not going to happen because, like, nobody dies from, like, more people die in airplane accidents than die of a bubble in a flu shot needle.
Well, let me put on my Buddhist hat for a minute here. I think it's the scared of feeling the feeling that you're feeling about what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the fear of the fear
right.
that really gets you, where you build it up in your head. For me, like,
that's right.
That was probably my greatest fear as a child, was the whole idea that I might have to go to the doctor and get a shot. And I was completely traumatized.
God.
I was like, you know, like when you drive by the vet and your dog starts barking, like that was me.
I had no
like,
idea that other people had. I thought this was my own weird,
morbid fear of getting a shot. It was this, like,
oh,
I would just burst into tears just thinking.
I had the same
really?
Thing. I thought that was my own
wow.
weird psychosis. So
also pooping in public bathrooms,
you know what?
Oh yeah, no, can't, never. Ugh.
You know what bothers me about getting the shot? It's that I imagine it's not the shot, it's that I imagine how upset how anxious I am while they're unpacking the needles and everything, sitting in the little chair, you know what I mean? And they like tie
yeah.
you off, and then they do a little swab, and it's just that's the moment that I dread. It's like, it's the actual shot, there's almost a relief of that it happens and it's not as bad as I imagined. And it's
right, right.
It's the out of control anxiety in that moment that I just can't. It's a very out of control experience.
I mean, not to make it about kids and parents, but like, this is something you face all the time with a kid. And I am sympathetic to it because I suffer from it too, which is like, there's all kinds of things where you just want to be like, just fucking do it. Like, I swear to God, it's not as bad as you think it's going to be. Just do it. I know everything will be fine. And this is your Sisyphean task as a parent, is to not find yourself saying that all the time, even though it turns out to be true. But like, I think there's a lot of things like this, you know? I mean, I was talking to my kid about a term I first learned probably in the early 80s was the first time I heard about agoraphobia.
Mm-hmm.
And agoraphobia was something everybody was like, oh God, we have finally gone too far with our understanding of phobias. Because back then, agoraphobia, when they talk about it on the news, they would say, oh, there's this crazy new thing crazy people have, which is a fear of everything. or a fear that was described as fear of everything, fear of open spaces, or in time, it was like fear of being anywhere outside the house. Now, if you go and actually look up agoraphobia today, what it says is incredibly fucking sensible, which is that it's a fear of being in a situation where you might be embarrassed, anxious, or scared, which I totally understand. That totally makes sense. But there's just all this stuff that, like, you don't have a clinical explanation for it, and so you kind of just got to fake your way around it. I'm not sure where I'm going with this.
No, no, that totally makes sense.
I'm glad we have developed ways. I'm glad we have developed, this goes back to the spectrum stuff. This goes back to, like, the allergy stuff. All of this stuff, it's such a relief. It's not an answer. It's not the end. But it is such a, it's so, it makes me feel good about science and medicine at its near best when we get better at the ability to detect, measure, and properly label something. Because now you have something you can deal with. We're not done. It's not fixed. But, like, we're better off than we were before. Like, to me, that's the march of medicine that I like to see, is, like, now, no, you're not stupid. Like, you have something called dyslexia that we didn't used to have a name for. Like, that kind of stuff makes me really happy. I mean, not happy, but, like, you know, there's so much shit you hear about these industries that, like, the actual, the science that leads us to be able to detect something better is, like, it's, I don't know, that just makes me happy as a modern person.
I always like to think that hopefully all of, like, the new developments and stuff, I want it to make me more boring. Like, I don't want being gay to be, like, an interesting thing about me. Like, I don't want being bipolar to be an interesting thing. Like, it's just a thing. And
any more than your blood type.
Yeah,
right?
I just,
it's not like you, it's not like a, where you go, oh, I'm A positive. Yeah. It's like I'm special. It's just another fact.
I certainly know people who like that, who have some facet of their identity, some facet of that they, you know, of a thing about them that they can't really control, you know, like that they're gay or they're gluten intolerant or whatever. And that becomes their whole identity, right? Like the fucking, like that girl I was telling you about, the twin mom or whatever on Instagram. And it's like, that's just a random thing that happened to you. That's not, you know, that's not actually.
It's like, see that picture of Stephen Colbert with his black friend. It's like, that's his black friend.
Yeah,
that's his friend. It's just like, his friend. It's like, the black guy.
I'm automatically suspicious and assume that people are extremely boring if their entire identity is being like the gay friend or the gluten intolerant person, or, you know, it's like, really, that's the best you have.
You think they define it that way?
Yes, yes. Some people who, I'm not, this is not in a vacuum, right? This isn't absent, like, societal pressure, but some people take those things of like, hey, I had twins, or I can't eat bread, and then it's like, or like, I'm like paleo or whatever, and then it's like, boom, that's going to be their whole identity. And they're like the paleo guy, the gay person. And it's like, that's so boring. Like, you didn't pick that. That's just a thing about you. Like, don't substitute that for a personality. Like, I don't want to go, all your stories have to relate to you eating paleo. Like, I don't want to hear this. Or there's also, there's also like high functioning alcoholic guy. There's like, mm-hmm. where all their stories are about drinking. And it's like, I don't want to hear your stories about drinking. Like, can't you have some other interesting facet of your personality?
Well, there's a joke a long time ago that is still a true thing, which is when people would say, well, like, you know, why isn't there a men's liberation movement, or why isn't there a men's club and all that stuff?
Well, great point, Merlin.
Yeah. Hashtag International Men's Day. What a fun day.
Why isn't there a White History Month?
we're so lost in all of this. Uh-huh. You'll not replace us.
And that's when we invented processed cheese. And a mayonnaise jar that you can store upside down so that it pours out right when you open it.
I mean, but like the one feature of being the dominant culture, like from a hegemonic standpoint, is that everything ends up in some way being defined by its value to you or how it's different to you. Whether that's like, the value of women is that it's my property and I take care of them. I think of this person like my daughter. Why don't you think about him like a fucking human being before you worry about whether it's somebody's daughter? Like, that's useful as a way to emulate the feeling that this is actually a human being. But, you know, you start with the property and you go, I have to take care of the things that belong to me, and I'll be a benevolent dictator with the things that I own. And then I have to keep an eye on all the things that I can identify as being different from me. And you don't even have to define who you are. You just get to define everybody else as being the absence of what you are, or being the corrupted, sometimes impotent version of what you are. Right. So, that's my crippled friend, Wheels. You know, it's like, you know.
That's my, this is my, this is my disabled friend. He's a clown with a hook for a hand.
Let's go to your house.
It does. I always hate when you're in some sort of group discussion setting, and then someone has to start make this statement where they go, "Well, as a blank," and it could be well, as a gay man, or it could be like as an architect. It doesn't matter. It's like whenever, just don't say that.
It's
part.
The worst. It's the worst dependent clause.
Just don't say that part. Like, I realize this is probably my crankiest old man opinion, but like, it's the least interesting thing about you are your fucking food allergies and your sexual orientation, all these things you can't control. Like, it's just not interesting. It's like, I would rather hear if you're into model trains. Like, at least that's something that you picked.
As Thomas the Tank Engine enthusiast.
Yeah. Listen, I'm into clown hooking because of how God made me. I did not. Clown hooking is not a choice in my life. It's who I am.
As someone who really enjoys eating snack foods with utensils.
Comma.
Mine is, as someone, a podcaster.
Yes. As a woke Twitter ally.